Mary Kay Greer is an independent scholar, writer, teacher, and professional tarot consultant, known for her innovative teaching techniques. With over 56 years tarot experience, she is the author of 12 books on tarot and on magic, and taught tarot in colleges and universities for 12 years.
That certainly brought a smile to my face.
I'm glad. Mary Kay Greer, welcome to Magic Without Fears, Hermetic Podcast. Welcome to the Frater RC Show. But today, it's all about you, and how are you doing? You said you're snowed in down in the States?
Pretty much, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, up in the Sierra foothills, yes.
Okay. I was having a hard time fathoming being snowed in California, but I guess anything's possible. You guys do have mountains.
Think of Donner Pass, which is less than an hour away.
Okay, yeah, that's a slightly famous place now, isn't it? The internet loves talking about that. That's a wild story, the Donner family. Even as a kid,
yeah,
I remember hearing about that.
Sad story.
Oh, horrific. Horrific, yeah. So welcome. It's good to see you. I'm glad you said I have you for a little extra time because of the snow. So praise to the snow. Thanks to nature.
Yeah.
We've got a few things to talk about. And it's been 35 plus years since your great opus on the tarot came out and sent shockwaves through the tarot world.
Yep. And still there's new translations coming out in different languages. And suddenly I hear from a bunch of people from that country. Yeah, it continues to open people's minds, or people discovering it for themselves. And I don't know how many people have over the years said, that's the book I wanted to write at that time. I just happened to have gotten it there right then.
Yeah,
so it was in the air.
Was there a strong, there must have been a strong intuitive, where I'm going with that word, with the intuitive impulse to do that book when you did it. Here's the book I did. After meeting you at PantheaCon, I started looking at your work outside of my favorite of your books, which of course is Women of the Golden Dawn. I love this book so much I hunted down a hardcover because, yeah. But tarot for yourself, it changed the game. And yeah, how does it feel to look back on that? And do you get many emails from people now in foreign countries and reading it new languages asking for readings?
Not so much asking for new readings, but I do get a lot of requests to teach either in the country or via internet. Yeah.
That's not bad.
Do conferences and yeah. No, I love to travel. So when I get the chance to do that, it's wonderful. And yeah, I've been to every continent except Antarctica teaching. And yeah, and to see people come alive when we're doing that interactive kind of technique where the reader is guiding a person through their own reading, just to see the delight on everybody's face is so wonderful if they haven't really experienced that before.
Yeah, yeah. What was the thing, in your opinion, that struck such a strong chord when this book came out in the 80s, when Tarot for Yourself first came out? That was different from the works that you had come up on, and the what was different?
Well,
my life.
One of the key things was.
Oh, I was just gonna say, because I'm from the generation that grew up on your work, so I don't know what it was like before your work.
When I got the idea for this, one of the things I did, and I went around, I was living in San Francisco, and asked everybody I knew who read tarot cards, do you read cards for yourself? And all of them, except one, said, yes, I do. And a few of them would say, yes, I do. You know, that was Berkeley and strong women who would say that. Some of them were very upfront about it. Of course, doesn't everybody? And some of them were very shy and like, I know the books say not to, but I do. And one woman said, no, I've never read tarot for myself. Of course not. But that was one of dozens. Yeah, and during the time, there was a book that really influenced me a lot. If I can remember the name, but it was basically on The New Diary. Yeah, so the idea of using a journal or diary as personal exploration, talking to yourself, really communicating deeply and exploring all different aspects of your life, not just writing what happened today. So from that, and also the kind of way she talked to the reader as you, as if I'm talking to you. So it's really we, but she always addressed this as you, as if she was really directly talking to you. And so those two things came together. How do I make this into its own self-exploratory, creative journal process and do it in a way that makes us feel like we're all together in this?
It's hard to ignore the fact that since you also wrote a book on the main four women of the Golden Dawn, that you, it seems that you were also influenced, like the Golden Dawn has a pathworking, meditative, self-exploratory approach to the tarot. And it seems like you might have taken some impetus from that to expand it into a method that anyone can use, not just people who are in the Golden Dawn.
Yes, and I had gotten fairly early into the BOTA for a short while. I'm not a really good follower of things like that. That was through correspondence courses. But I did have it enough, plus meeting along the way a couple of people who had been in it for 10 years or more, who also helped me on that side of it. And then I helped them to come out from that kind of personal, meditative, exploratory form into actually doing readings. So we were helping each other, because in the BOTA in the early days, they always said, don't ever do a reading for someone else. This is for your self-study. And after a long time, you'll be prepared to read for others. So I was the one that helped them over that bridge. And they helped me, yeah, in that kind of deep visioning work that is part of it. Yeah, very much a part of doing the personal work. And yeah, San Francisco, the personal self-development period.
Mm-hmm. That was the era when I met you at PantheaCon in 2020. And for those who don't know you, you attended my lecture. This is famous now among my podcast listeners, this anecdote, because it was such a big deal to me. But I was lecturing on W.B. Yeats and the Hermetic Celtic mysteries that he started to develop. And it was a massive room over 100 people in the lecture. And you were there. And it was so cool to be able to gesture to you and say, look, a lot of this started when I stayed home from school in Vienna for 3 days, pretending to be sick in high school so I could finish Women of the Golden Dawn, because I could not put it down. And I was in the Zelator grade of a GD order at the time. So it was wild to be giving a lecture there at PantheaCon and have you, of all people, right there as a major influence, because your Women of the Golden Dawn was a bigger influence to me than the Rigardi stuff at that time. Because I was in an order, we weren't reading the books, we were studying the order curriculum. But yours was one of the few history books that wasn't polemical. Like the Ellick Howe and the other history books, they were either stodgy and rigid and academic, which is fine because you're looking for facts, but there wasn't much vitality or alchemical sulfur in them. But you brought that into your Women of the Golden Dawn. And also, I think at the same time, you pioneered the use of astrological and progressed charts in biography. I don't think anyone has ever done that before. Are you aware if anyone had?
I did run into a couple of people who, years ago, I just don't remember the details. Okay. There had been a little bit of that at times, but mine was the first book that used it as a full acknowledged biographical technique. Yes. Yeah, and yeah, you know, I felt like I had the right to do that. Yeah, they were astrologers. I was an astrologer. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it because I was studying astrology. My mom's a professional astrologer since the 70s. And so as I was reading it, I was learning astrology and I was able to even participate with you in the analysis because of my preliminary knowledge at the time in the 90s to be able to make those analyses and think, oh, that's what that means. That's very interesting. It was just very cool. Yeah, meeting you at PantheaCon was a big deal. You coming to my lecture was a freaking fabulous. And I was there because I was working at Isis Oasis with DeTracy Regula and teaching a Monday night magic class with Granny Rainbow, Arissa Victor. And I think you might have met her along the way. Yeah.
Oh, yes, I know well.
She was the protege. Yeah, you knew her quite well. Yeah, so may she rest in peace. Yeah.
Jason Lauderhand,
right. Yeah, his book's right here, there. And so you would have known him as well, which I'm sad I never met him, because he actually was a protege of Paul Foster Case, I believe, and the Bota sister.
Actually, Paul Foster Case had wanted him to be the next head of the BOTA, and he declined it because he felt that wasn't his role. He wanted to keep working his mundane job and every Thursday night teaching his, or leading his tarot class, his tarot discussions that people went on. And I didn't go regularly because he was on the far side of town and I was teaching and doing a million things, had a small child and a family. I went on occasion whenever I could. Yeah.
Is that where you met Arissa, Granny Rainbow?
I'm not sure if I met, I think I met her before or somewhere in the process, probably through Thalassa and the BATS workshops. And yeah. Yeah. I mean, we became a tight-knit group in San Francisco area, Bay Area.
Yeah, reading about Lorian Vigne's, reading her biography while I was at the Oasis in Geyserville, was quite an interesting story to hear about her interactions with Anton Zander LaVey and the Black House and her quest to keep ocelots and servals alive, which she struggled with in the early years, but eventually figured it out. And of course, I got to see the latter days of be a part of Granny Rainbow's last few years at the Oasis, and that was a very special thing. Being at PantheaCon and presenting and meeting you, and you, I have a little video on my cell phone of you and me after having a few with Lon, accosting Lon in the hallway. It's quite funny. Lon Milo Duquette seems, who are these people? Yeah, but he knew us, of course. Yeah, it was fun times. Really special final PantheaCon. In the comments, we have many listeners of watchers right now. But Dr. Terry Burns, a dear friend and colleague of mine, she says, I love the difference between your approach to the tarot and that of Paul Foster Case. He's fine, but very rigid. And she footnotes that with, it's a shift from a system that sometimes seems to be speaking down to you to a personalized psychological creative practice. So that's an interesting note between Paul Foster Case's more analytical, less personal approach, which was what you were trying to evolve with your work in tarot for yourself and all your books since then.
I've read his book probably at least 5 times, used it in classes and in a book group I was in. We did a study of it at my insistence. And I am a firm, I shouldn't say firm believer, because I think that people can approach tarot from many different places. But for me, the connection to the correspondences in the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and the work of Paul Foster Case, he was the first one who really made sense to me out of all of that, so I could see the different correspondences as a unit together and how they influenced each other and how the astrology that I was learning as an astrologer was could be incorporated very beautifully into the tarot. People always complain it's a round peg in a square hole or a square peg in a round hole, whichever, but I'm sure, definitely it is. But they do harmonize in these wonderful ways without being a complete overlap, which is what I appreciate about them. Other people find it very distressing. I find it one of the great things about those correspondences, integrating them together.
Yeah, so you weren't trying to efface or subvert, but you were just standing on his shoulders and saying, hey, I can see something. Check that out.
How do they add to each other? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we're always building, and that's great. Boda's correspondence course is still very well regarded and praised by everyone. So yeah, no shade on Boda at all. If you want to take a good, and it's a very affordable. So I think it's like 25 bucks a month. So it's, their correspondence course takes a few years though. I haven't done it yet, but I still plan on doing it.
I know somebody who was working on her 11th or 12th year. Yeah. And she'd been pretty consistent about it. Whereas with me, I was just never consistent enough to be able to advance to the higher levels because I'm also meticulous. I won't push myself where I haven't actually done all the work.
Yeah, that's good. What was for you as a tarot reader when you were first learning the most challenging thing?
Oh, when I was first learning, probably the most challenging thing was that whenever tarot came up with anybody else, they were turning to me because I didn't know for the first several years anybody else who did tarot or as I went along knew more than I had come to at whatever point I was at. So I was always the one that people would look to, even when I was sitting there going, okay, the book says, which there's nothing wrong in that. Yeah. How do we do this now? Will you be my guinea pig? But it was also interesting that among the first years, as people would say to me, oh, you're into the tarot. Will you read my cards? I was in college and I read for at least two guys who we had started dating or were checking each other out to see if we wanted to date. And two of them said to me, I don't think I want to date you. You know too much about me because of what I had told them from the readings. I scared them a little and I went, oops.
I'm of the generation that got to go on dates where people would start Googling us before they'd come. And I showed up to a date once where a girl had multi-pages of printed out material. Including an interview I'd done for the National Post. And I'm early 20s here, and they have a dossier on me from Google. Yeah, each generation has its challenges. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that was going back to the hippie 60s. Yeah.
Yeah, you know too much about me. Do you want to be with someone that doesn't know? What are you hiding here, buddy?
Everybody was hiding a lot there. Yeah, I thought it was funny. But there were other people who weren't like that at all, of course, and got interested. Some of them continued on with tarot and some didn't. But yeah, one of the first classes I taught, I think actually the very first class, about the third class, one of the young women came up to me and said, I'm sorry, I can't continue the class any longer. And I'm going, that's all right. Whatever you need to do is fine with me. She thought I might be upset or whatever, but I feel that people do what they need to do. And so I really expressed that to her. And so she opened up a little bit and she said, I came here to prove that what you were doing is the work of the devil, is sinful. But from what I've seen, I can't say that. And I think I better leave to preserve her own place within her religion, her church. And I haven't gotten that very often. I did learn to say to the one or two other people who said something like that to me was, if you have any negative thoughts about tarot, anything at all where that this might be wrong, please have nothing to do with tarot because I don't want those thoughts brought into my beautiful world and experience, not just me, but even around tarot at all. Keep your thoughts away from tarot is basically what I was saying, but in the nicest kind of way. Please do what's best for you and don't bring those thoughts to the world of tarot because they don't belong there.
Absolutely. It's a spiritual practice at the end of the day, however you might psychologize it, whatever the neuroscience of it might say.
Yeah.
It's spiritual. It's spiritual. And actually, that is a nice segue into, I wanted to brush up a bit more on what I knew of you for this chit chat. I don't really do interviews formally. They're not interviews. They're just hangouts. We're just hanging out. So you wrote the foreword to The Neuroscience of Tarot. And as soon as I looked into it, the book arrived a few days ago. So I've read your foreword and I just flipped through the rest. But I'm like, how did I not hear about this? How did this not get on the radar of every not every diviner, every reader, every magician, every psych, everyone. Why is this not one of the most talked about books in Western esotericism?
It is among the small group, at least, people that I've told about it and people who have met Siddharth Ramakrishnan at the various conferences, because every time he speaks at a tarot conference or anything related, people invite him back or invite him to the next conference that they're involved in. He's a wonderful teacher, presenter, and the kind of mix of his background, being able to talk very pure science and explain things within the scientific context of it, staying within that those rules and that kind of logic, and then say, and on the other hand, we have these experiences, which there's no reason why neuroscience science has to struggle along to explain them. We can see the parallels. We can understand a lot of these things from these different perspectives, but we don't have to have a line drawn at the end of what logic can explain. So
he goes beyond psychologization into the neuroscientific and then finds a way. Does he find a way to circumscribe that within spirituality, or how does intuition as the noose or higher consciousness fit with intuition psychologically and neuroscientifically? Because he sees intuition as a certain set of things explained neuroscientifically. You describe in your foreword how you look at intuition. And actually, I can just read to people quickly how you say you see it. That might be interesting for people. Intuition, I define it, first off, it's a 50-50 proposition, apparently, due to biases, prejudices, beliefs, expectations, and opinions. But of course, it seems like you're implying that can be mitigated through practice and development, of course. And you say, I define intuition as the instantaneous firing of previously established neural pathways in response to sensory input. And this input interacts with our emotions, prior knowledge, and experiences. It's triggered by our environment through our physical senses. By contrast, psychic experiences are delivered through what are known as clairsenses. They are extrasensory and then interpreted via our personal associations. I could go on because it's a great little foreword. It made me think, like in the Hermetica, in the Hermetic tradition, and it's a Hermetic podcast, right? The noose is the Greek term for what's often translated as intuition. And the Hermetica says the reason God gives us that, these are pagan texts. They still talk about God, though.
Yeah.
God gives us the noose so that we can have intuition, and then so that we can follow up on it through our logos or our reasoning, our slightly rational consciousness. And so there's quite an intersection there between the psychology of tarot, the prejudices and pre-understandings that we have, biases and associations with the neuroscience, and then this more difficult to define spiritual aspect, because as we know, a lot of the Renaissance justified divination by saying, oh, it's not the cards, it's not the horoscope that's doing that, it's God talking through those. Don't burn
angelic
me.
Spirits.
Nothing requiring any inquisition here. We're just following Jesus's light and truth through tarot. That's what they said in the Renaissance. So where do you see the spiritual coming into the psychological and the neuroscientific when it comes to intuition in tarot reading and divination?
I see a lot of these things as being on a range, and it's not a fixed range. It's actually a rather mushy range, but there's intuition that has been defined since the 19th century by scientists, which is that knowledge plus experience. And also a certain focus, a certain openness to it and to those experiences so that you recognize them when they're there. But intuition in general, with that, the neurofiring from previous experiences and so on, is going to be about 50-50, except in areas that you've got a lot of really deep knowledge. Just like a mother's intuition, mothers will be even more sensitive to their child, or a doctor who's seen this same basic illness 1,000 times and recognizes it right off. They might have a little check off. Do you have a cough? Do you have this? Do you have that? Is there a fever? But those are just confirmations of what their often their initial realization is. But then they can be totally mistaken. I know people who years ago got shingles and it took weeks before the doctors figured out what it is. Now they get it much quicker. I don't know if it became more common or what. But yeah, there's so intuition is, if I say, what's the city that has the most murders in the United States? A lot of people have their intuition of what it is. And it can be way off, but they can be very sure of it because they heard something somewhere or sometime. Because that's that knowledge thing that set up those automatic associations in their brain between a name and a different thing. So then we get in what's happened, and I find very curious, is that people used to say they read tarot psychically. And I think they may have had a couple of experiences where somebody was demanding answers and that they couldn't just really give them accurate answers at the time or whatever. And they didn't want to be put on the spot. Or they found people who were very suspicious of that psychic stuff. So if you look online, everybody calls themselves an intuitive reader because it was more scientifically okay. The scientists talk about it, doctors talk about it, women's intuition, mother's intuition and knowledge. All people in all kinds of ranges have these fabulous intuitions. So they've got a trained intuition through tarot that allows them even greater access to it. So for me, it's more that there's the very scientific neurofiring intuition. And then there's this whole range of staying open and aware to what Jung and Wolfgang Pauli, the physicist, called synchronicity, which ties in with it, the synchronicity of two people sitting down to doing a reading and drawing just exactly the right card that explains just what they said. There could be no more perfect card. It happens all the time. So that's this, the intuition of the moment that's seen then as a synchronicity that something special is happening. Pay attention. And then we, and along kind of riding along the top of that, we have empathy, EQ, emotional intelligence, and the empathetic response. And lots of other things that we talk about in terms of the training that we get through meditation and journeying and so on, working with magical items that make us sensitive to these things in the time of the year and oh, all those wonderful things that make a difference. And then we get into the clairs, the pure psychic, the extrasensory. So the information is not coming in through the senses that we interpret and give meaning to, but it's coming in through forms that can't really be mapped well scientifically. They have some success at various times, and then rigid scientists say, but it doesn't happen all the time. Partly because you do need a really supportive environment to be in. You can't be, for your psychic abilities to work, you need to be able to relax into that space and open yourself up. And if you've got somebody staring down at you, it is not always effective or efficient, or trying to do something so precise that it's almost impossible. So anyway, you get in, and the clairs are the clear seeing, clear feeling, clear hearing, clear thinking, clear imaging, all of these, there's smelling even. So they go beyond the physical level. And I'm no longer super concerned about where something stops and another thing starts. I just know they do. When people say, how does tarot work? I can give them what I consider, and many people, Siddharth, I think would agree with this, as the only really scientific rational explanation is that tarot is a projection device, like a Rorschach test. And it works perfectly well with that. That's a good explanation for it. But we all know when we do readings, how many times does somebody sit down, say, I want to look at this, and the first two cards out of the deck are literally exactly what they said. My father is against my doing something. We've got the Emperor and one of the difficult cards causing a lot of trouble in the family because of my doing tarot. And so we've got the Emperor and the Devil or something. And the Emperor being the archetypal father. And by archetype, we find that Carl Jung, with his attention to myths that repeat throughout all the different cultures and become living motifs in our lives, like what's mothering, what's fathering, as it appears in myth as well as our own lives, has become one of the major ways that people work with tarot, which allows our intuition to work logically through that study of metaphor and meaning in myth, as well as psychically of a reader who sits there and describes your father with infinite detail and the thing that he just said last night, which might be a psychic impression. I have very few pure psychic impressions, but I've had a couple and I know they're different.
Yeah, you have to be careful with that when, especially I find with new readers, with just going with you don't want to say every thought that pops in your head just because you're doing a tarot reading. But a real strong transmission or impression as we take it seems to overwhelm the mind, I think. It tends to, and there's always a way that you can test that with people, because people are having a reading. So you can say, hey, is there something going on to do with this? Because you're testing the water to see if you can tell them this impression. It's not because you're necessarily cold reading them. You're just saying, is there something going on with the sun? Because you got maybe a shocking impression of something going on with their son or something. And you don't want to just spit it out because it could be a bit too inappropriate or dramatic. But if they go, if they give you that look like, oh yeah. And then you say, I'm seeing this. It's not in the cards, but I'm seeing this. And then that's often where we've all seen those breakthroughs and the person's just, oh my God, this person's actually psychic. Or this was actually a pneumatic moment of spirit manifesting through our synchronicity. And that really does happen. There's also been times I've been doing readings, because I have been doing readings since I was 12, mainly because I needed to make money and because I love doing it. And I thought they wouldn't, I had gone too goth. My hair was too long. It was 94. They wouldn't hire me as babysitters anymore. No one wants a chubby, black-haired 12-year-old goth boy to babysit their kids. So I got into tarot reading when I aged out of babysitting. And I would find sometimes in readings that my interpretation of the card didn't land, and that my intuition of the card didn't land. And then sometimes I'll be like, okay, hold on. I'm really sensing there's a meaning here for you. And I flip open one of my little books and read them what it says, and they go and they land, and one of those things just hits hard and they say, that's exactly what it is. So that's an interesting thing as well, because, hey, is the book doing the reading here or is it me? What's going on?
Yeah.
But there's a holistic whole.
Can be wonderful.
Yeah. There's a holistic whole thing. Even the books are part of it.
Yes. Early on, what I found when I was still reading out of the book or checking something later out of the book to see what else I was missing, that I described it as a ring or a bell, but it wasn't anything auditory. And still to this day, don't quite know how to do it. But most people understand what I mean, is that you're reading through a list of meanings and something catches your eye. Something causes you to pause or take a breath or whatever. And if you pause on that and say, where is that in my life right now? Or how did this relate to the card and the person in front of me? That will often be the piece. So we might see it as we're reading through the book. If you're a brand new beginner and your best friend is sitting across from you and you say, okay, I'm going to have to use the book because I just started. And as you look through what the book says, something will jump out for you and say that, or ask the person, how does this relate to your situation? And it will work. And I have a lot of respect for some wonderful books that I find are actually oracles in their own rights, especially Rachel Pollack's Shining Tribe Tarot. The text in her book for her cards it's an oracle in the greatest tradition of oracles, and has often spoken to me very directly in that more psychic realm of how could this be so precise, so exact, so perfect in this book. At this moment, I can read her cards separately, but for me, most of it is that communication, because she died 2 years ago. And the night before, I had an altar for her because she had been ill for a while and had cards laid out from the last reading I had done to see how things were going. And one night I did a reading and I said, oh, this is it. it was so clear in the reading, and she died early the next morning. And it was, she had told me in her book, and the text in her book was so clear in the cards. So, wow. And afterwards, I could continue talking with her, which yeah. Since she's one of my best friends, it's been a great joy for me.
Well, I'm very sorry for your loss, and I will definitely be getting that deck. I haven't been a much of an Orald Kuldeck person since they became a thing, but I'm not opposed to them at all, because I just didn't know where to start. So I will start with that. That might be my first Oracle deck.
It's so, actually a tarot deck, but it goes beyond the traditional tarot. Yeah.
Okay. And Shining, it's called Woman, the 12th tarot. The Shining Woman Tarot.
The first edition is Shining Woman, and then she redid it with a large publisher as the Shining Tribe, and modified a few cards, but basically it's the same one. And then we wrote the book also for a more general audience than the more strongly feminist LGBTQ plus audience that she had for her first deck. So she generalized it a bit more, but a lot of myth in there, and stories and bits of poetry, and yeah, it's quite amazing. And at first, some of the cards seem, how does that connect with the traditional card? But if you sit with it a bit, you suddenly make that connection, and you go, whoa, what she did here is just amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I look forward to looking at that. And I'm sorry, I will never get to meet her, but I guess she's part of the universe now. So I'm sure she's whispering in the ears of anyone who enjoys her work and engages.
Lots of people.
Yeah. She now has more a wider, even wider reach. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Oh yeah. But
I was just going to say that mentioning it as an oracle is an interesting phenomenon that has always been there to some degree, but now is becoming the predominant one because of instant prints, all kinds of things. There are now thousands of decks available, new decks coming out every year. I've been in some metaphysical bookstores where there'll be an entire wall of tarot decks. And I'm standing there. I have a lot of tarot decks, but I'm standing there with my jaw open going, duh, how do you pick one? What do you do? How do you know it's any good? And a lot of people go to them. They sometimes have an excellent book with them, and other times they just have a very basic little book or even a folded piece of paper in it. What a lot of people have begun doing is finding a deck that appeals to them because they're really into cats, or they're really into trees and various creatures, or it's an LGBTQIA deck, and they think that will be the perfect one for them. And they end up reading it as an oracle. I'm on the fence because I respect oracles. And I feel that there's a lot going for them. But at the same time, it saddens me that there's not more depth. And I do get frustrated when on Facebook groups where people are practicing readings and somebody has said, I drew these cards for this question. Will you all interpret for me? And there's people who are interpreting those cards with no relationship to any of the standard meanings that we've ever seen. As a matter of fact, sometimes totally opposite what anybody who's been trained in tarot would say that they mean. And people are going, oh, thank you so much for that interpretation. And I'm going, oh, you know, my word. At the same time, there's occasionally somebody who is an oracular reading off of the image on the cards, which I may or may not recognize, and they do strike home. You can hear it in what they're saying. So who am I to? I'm a human being. I sometimes judge. I'm sorry. But there are great people on all ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, you're allowed to have your, Yeah, it's an interesting tension there between oracle cards and readers who might, or even tarot readers who might, lean 100% into pure intuition and free association, but of course, versus yeah. any defined meanings and parameters. When we do a reading, which would be horrible for me when I think back on my childhood readings, if every time the death card came up, I allowed the person to think that someone's going to die or they're going to die, dear Lord, that would have been horrific. Because that card pops up a lot, and I always get to be the one to say, oh, it's not about physical death. It can be, but usually it's more about transformation and moving on, moving forward. Probably it's a very good card. It's a great card to get. I love getting the death card. I'm like, thank God I'm making progress here. Yes. Yeah. But there, because the intuition does come into play so much, and we do care about that spiritual, enlightened inspiration, there is the tension between those two things. And I was wondering, is there a... What do you think of that? Is there any insights from the neuroscience of that? How do we balance, how do readers, especially new ones, balance traditional definitions and meanings and versus their own intuitions? Do you think it's the fact that because if you lean fully into intuition and eschew all traditional meaning and definition, do you think it's the danger is that you open the gate too much to personal free association along with bias, prejudice, and that sort of thing? Is that, do you think, trying to put my finger
it
on
depends.
The danger yeah. of abandoning traditional meaning? As a GD person, I love traditional meaning and Golden Dawn definitions yeah. of the cards. But as a psychic,
it depends
person,
on the personal.
There's
some people who are natural psychics, intuitives, whatever. They catch the stream, they pick up energy from the person they're reading for, whether it's over a Zoom connection or in person or even over the phone. I know I've had phone conversations where I'm picking up things from the person, which is saying, yeah, keep going with this. Keep, this is the right direction. There's people who are really sensitive and can read other people as well as the cards. There's a whole range of things. So it's not so much that there's an absolute rule. The problem I see, perhaps the biggest problem, is that there are some people who think that their intuition is absolutely infallibly correct and nobody can convince them otherwise because they're just blocking the reality and the truth of what they've just been told. And that there are some people who are lost in their own stuff, because in neuroscience, one of the things that they've done many studies on this is that people, if they look at a series of pictures, will often immediately start putting them together. Most people will, in some kind of storyline, some kind of interrelationship. And as soon as you start to do that, you become fixated on that first impression. So if you've got checkpoints, you can cross-check that against it, which is why the study can allow you to do that and do that cross-check and be constantly adapting those things. Also, there's different levels. Like I read what I call therapeutically. I'm not a therapist, but there's lawyers who can work therapeutically. It's a healing attitude towards your work. And so what I do is I often guide a person. Sometimes if they have no knowledge of tarot whatsoever, and sometimes professional readers, I guide them through their own reading by asking a series of open-ended questions, not just yes, no questions or whatever. Look at the card and simply describe the card to me. And I listen very carefully to what they say. I ask them to go a little deeper into something or other. Usually we start with a very literal description. What's the person wearing? What are the colors there? What are they holding? In which hand? And then what seems to be the attitude of this person on the card? And then where is that in your life? Now, sometimes people will say, look at the Empress card, a beautiful Empress card, and they'll start describing her as a mean, narcissistic person who hates them and is doing everything to destroy them. And I'm sitting there going, oh, okay, because there is, in Jungian psychology, there's that evil mother complex that's out there. The divine feminine can be really cruel at times and do some pretty horrific things in myths. I'm willing to acknowledge that's all in there. But for me then, with my knowledge and my awareness and being very careful and subtle not to go beyond what a person can conceptualize for themselves and see for themselves as a possibility to look at how can we move from a very problematic state to something beneficial? How can you begin mothering yourself and turn this image into the self-image? What is there in this image that you would like to have in yourself? And so we start building a way for them to move from where they were and their real issue, which I'm willing to acknowledge and say, wow, I know mythic figures of empress mothers, of the great goddess that entirely fit that. And we know that side is very real. To what other possibilities, and do you want to build that for yourself? Is that there in someone else that can be a model for you? Is that we'll find a way to shift them. And if you want to think of it more metaphysically, it's like going from the mundane knee-jerk reaction to something into the higher levels through the various levels of consciousness and imagination and then vision and spiritual connection, so that you're operating at a higher vibrational level and can make changes from that level down into back down into the physical. So that's bringing in a little bit of the technical part on the other end of it.
Just from you saying all that, I think some people will realize how that functions as a structure or a foil or a framework to bring you out of the danger of over-reliance or entranced reliance on your own intuition that could lead to the damage of tyrannizing the person you're reading for, right? Saying, no, this is what this is because my intuition's never wrong. Framework, these guidelines, the study of this art and this craft that we have, this divination, it forces your brain to not be able to fall into that trap because you have an understanding of multi-level meanings. Yes, the Empress is a beautiful card representing magic, abundance, the divine feminine, human satiety in general, so many things. Venus, door of the vault, for heaven's sake. It's the entrance to Tiferet. But Mother Nature. And as Mother Nature is a great example because Mother Nature also does some stuff that we would consider a little messed up sometimes. You remember the fires that we experienced in 2019 and 2020. I was right there in the epicenter of them. Oh boy, evacuating all these 198 exotic animals from the oasis in Geyserville. Did that twice. And some of those animals, they'll mess you up. Those are the alpacas. Oh boy, I saw them throw a 200-pound guy around the yard on a rope like he was a piñata. And Mother Nature has that dark side. It's not evil, but it's dark. And we experience that sometimes from our own mothers. Love mom over there. But so having that nuanced understanding, the study of tarot is itself a foil to obsession with one's own intuition or self-certitude. And as I wrote in my master's thesis, certitude is death. I was a younger, more self-certain man, of course, in those days. So maybe I should even wind that back a bit. We'll see. Crazy. Yeah. We got someone saying hello from Melbourne, Australia. Let's throw a few of our viewers' comments on the screen. Thank you. Profound greetings from Redwood Raven Clan. Everyone's very happy. Yes, someone's pointing out there's many misconceptions. And that's why you're on the podcast today to help show people some breadcrumbs to find their way through this forest of meaning in which we live. There's a beautiful book you wrote that, oh my God, I love this book so much. The Essence of Tarot, originally published, I believe, as The Essence of Magic.
Yes.
And I don't know why you changed it, but it makes sense to me. You are the tarot lady, but this is your exploration of the essential oils and plants and herbs that connect with each card. And my entry into the Western esoteric tradition was very much druidic and Wicca in the early 90s. And I, of course, I love the plants. I still love making my own incenses. How did you do this? It's actually a phenomenal work. How did you make this book? This did not look like it was actually that easy to create and research.
It actually was easy. I spent many years during the 80s and 90s leading women's blood mysteries, menstrual rituals, and the women's camps that I would go to were often a combination of women's spirituality camps, but also more and more even became herbal camps as well, because they would be done on land where the owners of it were growing all the various herbs. And then later I was invited to a lot of just the straight herbalist camps to teach tarot and tarot reading with the plants. So I was learning from them and they were learning from me. It was a wonderful time. So I got to know some of the great authors of various books on herbs and essential oils and become friends with them, including a wonderful woman who lives here locally, Kathy Keville. And we co-wrote a book which ended up under her name because the publisher wanted to call it after her name, but that was okay because we had a great time working on it. Anyway, it grew on me, I guess you would say. I didn't set out at some point in the 80s to become an herbalist per se, other than using some herbs in my own healing home remedies. But because of these associations, it just grew and took hold. And of course, it was used in a lot of the menstrual rituals that we were doing. We would always involve different kinds of plants and things as part of what we were working with. Yeah. And then the magic work that I had been doing, both between the Golden Dawn and also the women's spirituality magical work that we did for years. So all of these things became coordinated in my own mind and in my own practice. And so at some point I said, because more and more people that I knew were learning from me, doing it their own thing with it. Most of the herbalists I knew were also to some degree or another into tarot. And it just seemed the most natural thing. It became a problem when it was called the essence of magic, because tarot ritual and aromatherapy was the subtitle. And booksellers, as well as book buyers, want something that they know they're going for. And for booksellers, they didn't know which section of their bookstore to put the book in. And my thing is buy three copies at least and put them in three different areas. But no, they want to have that. What place does it belong? And that created a lot of problems. So when they finally decided to republish it, and I had more requests for republishing this book than any other book that I've written that went out of print. So
yeah, I'm not surprised. I highly recommend this book to everybody. This is absolutely amazing book. The reason I'm so excited about it is because it's one of the ones I had never checked out of yours. I looked at my books that I have of yours, and then I wanted to check out two new ones. So I checked out, that's one of the new ones, and the neuroscience one, that were the updating my knowledge on your work for this wonderful podcast, which time has flown. I mean, do we have you for another half hour or so?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, 15 minutes, okay. 20 minutes, maybe. Yeah.
We still have to get to K-pop. That's why I ask.
Oh, my lovely K-pop.
See, that's why we put it at the end there. We have done a good job, I think, of talking about a lot of things. I was going to get a bit more into the psychological prejudice aspect of things. But we've touched on that enough. It's interesting when you mention the fool card in your preface and the dog pulling off the sock. I got mauled at a beach by a kid as a dog. That was a past life. And so I was terrified of dogs up to adulthood. Now I love dogs because I did end up living with one in my mid-30s finally and got to really be with a dog. And now I'm obsessed with dogs and I can't wait to have a million of them myself. What can I say? They're amazing. But there was always an irrational fear. And the dog in the tarot card I did always see as this sort of hostile figure, playful but hostile perhaps. I thought about that. I was like, oh, that, because I didn't inter I use since I only used the Rider-Waite for readings in my early tarot days and now again recently, but in the whole middle period I used the Golden Dawn deck, and there's no dog in the Fool card, of course.
It's a child
picking an apple. Completely different cards. And I don't think we have time to get into analyzing that difference, but yeah. So now thinking of it, I'm like, oh, what is the dog to me now? What does the dog mean to me now? in that Fool card. And I'm going to do a whole meditation on that. I'm going to pathwork that now because I'm actually really curious. So it's interesting how just even contemplating or analyzing and understanding what our own prejudices and memories and associations are, that alone can act, it seems, like a powerful growth point and tool for us to expand our abilities to read a card for the person in front of us, and not just in the way that our instincts or intuition would urgently compel us to do. That I just thought was...
Remember that in the Marseille deck and some of the older Italian decks, there is a wild cat. Sometimes it looks more like a cat than a dog, but like a wild cat, bigger than a normal cat, or a dog that's tearing at the pants. And so it's a homeless person that's being chased out of town with one of the town dogs chasing after him and biting at him as he goes. This is one of the things that's important to me, and I have actually worked with it both energetically as well as on paper, and that's that, to me, every card has a whole range of meanings and potential meanings. And sometimes what I'll say to somebody when they're looking at a card is, as you look at this, what's the most problematic aspect of this card that you see, and what's the most beneficial one? And to imagine that being on a meter, those old-fashioned meters where the arm that goes backwards and forwards. So you've got all the very problematic aspects, like the sun card. What's the most problematic aspect of the sun? Sunburn? Somebody being totally in their ego? Narcissistic? Everything revolves around me? As well as the much more beneficial sides. It's easy to see. We can start putting that whole range now. As soon as I mentioned narcissism and all the rest of that, we start feeling that end out a bit more than we did.
Joy can easily turn to hedonism, right?
Yeah. And so where does that go? That's not necessarily all the way at the really horrible end. It's somewhere in between. So once somebody's named these ends, I ask them to, it's that energetic kind of thing like you can do with a pendulum or muscle testing, is where along that meter are you right now? And every person I've done this with will feel back and forth from those extremes and go, oh, I'm here. A little bit on the side towards beneficial, but it's a little bit stuck there. Where would you like to be? Oh, I don't have to be all the way there, totally, completely tearing off my clothes in joy and running around out there in the field. I could be about here. So what do we need to do to move from here to there, that little bit? Or from there to here? And then we can look at the card and see what hints are there in the card that suggests that movement. And I'm usually trying to guide them to make those connections themselves. But energetically, when they feel that, I've never had a person that they might have needed a little support in doing it. If it did work, where would you be? And they go, oh, here. Make it more of a game. And they're willing to play it as a game.
Oh, yeah, I will definitely take that as wisdom into my tarot teaching as well. You really sparked some ideas there. Of course, you have a whole book on different ways to read tarot for those who also want to know. There's an entire book on different methodologies of reading tarot.
That one's in there.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as you started talking about that, I was like, I know what that's from. It's from this one, because this is, I know. That book is a secret weapon for tarot teachers and readers, but especially if, everyone knows your books are great. That's why we're here. What would be, Mary Kay Greer, your Desert Island Tarot deck?
Oh, Rider-Waite-Smith deck, of course.
You're a classic lady. That's why I love you. The deck that it's funny because it's not, it's the Golden Dawn deck par excellence in a way, but not because it was used in the Golden Dawn, but because it emerged from it. If Roger Parisis is right, then Yeats suggested it, perhaps. We haven't seen the evidence, and Roger never finished his his work, it
his
seems.
Book, yeah.
Yeah. But at least Adam McLean released his lecture. It's been out since 2020. I talk about it all the time. No one listens. Mm. That's okay.
Yeah. But yeah. He was brilliant, though, Roger.
Ryder, yeah. But A.E. Waite was Golden Dawn. A lot of, I think, normies might not know that Pixie Smith was an adept of the Golden Dawn. So it was basically emerged out of the Golden Dawn and has traces of different traditions in it. The Parts of All story of Wolfram von Eschenbach that Tabby Cicero did a big thing on at a GD conference in the 80s or 90s. And then there's, of course, the Magician card famously doesn't have the Golden Dawn elemental weapons on the altar, but has the spear and the cauldron and the four tools of the four provinces of Ireland, of all things. So it really a mixture.
The four
of
suits.
Stuff.
It's basically
the four suits.
But,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and according to Roger Parisius, yeah. It's because of the four tools of Ireland. Again, the lecture's out there on YouTube, but we don't know if he. We don't have access to the Yeats archives unless you have any access through. You met one of the Yeats kids.
I talked to one of them. Yeah, and
was that Anne? Was it the girl, the daughter?
Oh, it's been so long that I don't even remember.
Well,
it was
been.
Back in the around 81, 82, and
that
we just
Anne,
talked on the phone. Trying to get hold of Roger Parisius at the time and also get permission to use some material while I was in Ireland doing the research. But, there was a point I wanted to make. Yes, that is that Waite, the same year that the deck was being made, also published his book on the Hidden Church of the Holy Grail. So specifically, yes, yes. So he had been working on this Grail material. So it's not just the Irish Grail, it's also the French traditions. In his book on the Hidden Church of the Holy Grail, he goes through all the Grail myths that he was able to access and find. And some of those stories are told in the suits of the cards, as well as some Masonic allusions to in the other suits. Like in the sword suit, it's the story of Hiram Abiff. It's the third degree initiation rite in Masonry. Yeah.
So I've been trying to figure out who to talk to that for the last 6 years about the Parisius lecture when Adam McLean dropped it on YouTube right before COVID started. And all along, it was you I was looking for. Why am I surprised? I tried to talk to Tabby about it. She was like, I don't know. And I tried to talk to a bunch of others. But you were the one who knows the most, and that's very cool. Yeah. I'm going to now, I got a little one of the Rider Waite ones, just one little Chinese ones, and everyone's like, that's not good quality. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm going to tape it up on a board and trying to figure out these stories. Yeah, of course. So now I'm going to look for the Hiram Abiff story. Oh, this is so exciting.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is so exciting.
We'll talk later.
Thank
I can
you
give you
very
some more
much.
Of the stories, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I do hope to run into you again in person one day so you can sign this thing.
Yes. I'd love to.
Come
to Omega in July. I'm teaching tarot magic with three other wonderful people for a weekend at the Omega Institute in upstate New York. So Charles Harrington, Nancy Antonucci, who wrote a wonderful book called Tarot Rituals, and Barbara Moore from Llewellyn Publisher, who's done many decks and books, will be there. And then after that, we're doing 5 days on Tarot Wisdom with Carolyn Cushing and Ellen Lorenzi Prince, who's done, I think, at least 4 tarot decks on the goddess in tarot, and her latest one, The Dark Daughters Tarot, oops, sorry, that's backwards, dedicated to me. So first deck that's ever been dedicated to me.
First deck dedicated to you. Well, I'm sure that won't be the last. So that's in New York. Is it a week-long thing?
The Tarot Magic is a weekend, July 17th to 19th, and Tarot Wisdom is July 19th. People arrive Sunday night to the 24th on Friday at noon. So it's 5 days of real intensive wisdom seeking and going into how to use all these new 21st century decks in ways that integrate both the intuitive as well as the traditions.
Wow, I will definitely check it out. For a long, because of lockdowns and COVID for years, I haven't left Canada in 6 years now, of course, since I evacuated back up here during lockdown. Yeah. And it was very hard to travel for those years, of course. But now traveling's become a possibility again. Not only that, I've been finding flights to places like in the States from Vancouver direct. Like I found a direct flight both ways, of course, return. No layovers from here, Vancouver to Austin, Texas, for $150 Canadian. That's 100 US.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, so if you have time and not a lot of money, you can keep your eye out on stuff these days and actually find some deals that will allow you to do maybe a little bit more traveling than you expected. So just throwing that out there for people and myself as well, because it does take a bit of hunting around. But if you pay attention to the alerts, you could actually end up getting some really good deals, which was not the case for a while there during the last 5 years. So it is not beyond the realm of possibility that I could go to a number of events this year and next that I didn't think I'd have any chance to be able to afford. But there's options. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Anything else you want to shout out before we conclude talking with a little chit chat about music?
Yeah. We'll just mention that this spring and summer at the Pierpont Morgan Library in Manhattan, there will be an exhibit of the earliest tarot decks. So it'll be a big major exhibit that's coming up with all kinds of interesting information. So people coming to the Omega Institute in upstate New York can fly into the Manhattan area and take a day to go to the Pierpont Morgan Library, which is a fabulous library. And they've got some of the oldest Italian, possibly the very first deck, the Visconti Sforza deck.
So they have Yale collection.
Not the Yale collection, that's at Yale, but they've got earlier one, which is called their decks
Visconti
that are
Sforza,
generally.
There's
several
Visconti
decks.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, there's
a bunch. I love those ones. I really love those ones.
Yeah.
But I love them all at the same time. So
it'll be a wonderful chance to just sit there and bask in these
decks. Oh, that would be cool.
In a great environment.
That would be cool. All right. I will. Yeah. Omega Institute, people, check it out. And of course, go to Mary's website or talk to her to find out more. Multiple people wanted to know if you still do tarot readings. And I promised I would ask.
Right now, I'm doing a lot of traveling and dealing with some things and trying to write a book. I'm on hiatus with the readings in general for right now. Sorry, but in order to get anything done, except when I'm listening to BTS, you wanted to know about K-pop.
Yeah.
Here they are.
So one
this
of my
is a tarot deck.
One of my favorite singers, and I most people would be surprised to hear, I don't talk about some of my love of pop music often for various reasons, but I'm a big fan of Halsey, and she did a song with BTS that I really thought was awesome.
Dynamite.
Now, I don't listen to music. I like lyrics. I'm a lyric guy, so I can't understand what they're saying most of the stuff, but the music quality and production of those bands, of all those K-pop bands, is absolutely phenomenal. I hear a lot of the criticism being about the music, and as a musician, and even all my music, me and my friends listen to Taylor Swift even if we don't like Taylor Swift, because the quality and production is shocking. It's shocking.
Yeah.
Aside from the songwriting and performance ability of these people, it's shockingly high-level productions that a lot of non-musicians or non-production people would never understand how intense it is. And it produces this amazing stuff. And BTS is, to call them a super, they are beyond anything that we even see in most Western bands, honestly. They are stratospheric in their accomplishments.
Yeah. They started out as a very small company that was going bankrupt, and they were blocked from being on television and radio in Korea. And they reached out to the internet and directly to fans through doing funny, crazy things that in front of their cameras so that the fans could get to know them. And it worked. It worked. Plus, they're incredibly talented. And K-pop in general, but especially BTS, it's not a genre. It's a whole range of genres, from R&B and full-fledged jazz to, I don't know all of them, everything from EDM to, of course, rap, because they're all really well-known. Two of them started out as underground rap artists in their teens.
Wow.
And They were seriously into what they were into. Yeah. And a lot of them, they start training their young people that are interested and have any talent in dance, singing, music, whatever. They get intense training. We think of the Olympic stars and how their lives revolve around their training. It's very similar for the music, people going into the music field. in South Korea. So
They're in such good shape and so disciplined from being musicians and dancers. I'm sure their recent 3-year stint in the army was a cakewalk. They're like, oh yeah, we get to sleep until 7. Are you kidding? Normally we're up at 5.
It was only 18 months, reduced from 2 years, but then they also had a period before and after as they were staggering going in and then coming out. And that allowed them to do a lot of more solo work than they had done before. They had always put out solo pieces that they would just put online for free. And actually, one of them made a whole music video over $1 million that he just gave away for free because it was his dream to do that. Actually, two of them did that in a way. Yeah.
I love it when artists do two that rappers. Sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Which are the two rappers?
There's three rappers altogether, two that did that. So RM, the leader, who's absolutely brilliant. And then we've got Yoongi, or he's got three names, depending on what kind of music he's doing at the time.
Seven
he also is an award-winning producer for other musicians as well. And he plays piano, classical piano and whatever. And then the third one is J-Hope, who was a street dancer. And so he picked up the rap once he got into the group, but they were all training him. But the first two were young teenagers fallen in love with rap. And I discovered them, interestingly, because I had gotten into K-drama, the Korean and other Asian dramas. And one day I just was starting to work on a book on Jung and Tarot that got sidelined. But I was sitting there thinking about K-dramas and about Carl Jung and Tarot. And I just put into the search engine Korea and Jung to see what do Jungians think of it. Are there any K-dramas that have been done with it? And BTS popped up because they did their first of two albums that were based on the ideas of Carl Jung. And immediately fell in love. It was like 24 hours and I was madly in love with them, all seven of them.
Wow.
So two albums based on the shadow, the persona, the ego, all of this stuff, exploring it through their music and their lives. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know. It's just
amazing.
You've
blown my mind. I have such a huge fundamental respect for artists and musicians because I'm a musician. It's just to also find out that there's such spiritual depth is a little surprised. I'm a little surprised. I'll just admit it. I did not expect that. So what makes the one you just showed me, Seven of Swords, what makes that fellow Seven of Swords?
Oh, yeah, there's what is called your bias, which is whichever one is your very favorite. And that's him for me because he had a hard childhood. His parents definitely did not want him going into music. They destroyed all the songs he had written. And he was working part-time to be able to do anything in the field. And people were stealing the music that he was writing and so on. Yeah. And
that's a tortured artist's origin story.
But yeah, he was discovered and moved from the town that he was from to Daegu, to Seoul, to see if he could make it. And he did end up in the group. And he's the one who always tells it like it is. He's the Seven of Swords because on here at the bottom, and this is a fan-made deck. They're not officially into tarot. I don't know if there's one picture of them with the tarot card, but they've done a ton of things with the tarot imagery. And I'm pretty sure that some of it was on purpose. There's one song called Blood, Sweat, Tears that has at least 20 images in it that could be taken directly as tarot images. You could print them off as tarot cards. They never mention it. And this is a book based on Demian by Hermann Hesse. Like I said, their leader, RM, is a super bookworm and genius intellect. So he's always exploring all of these different things. And then the rest of them get into it. But yeah, the Seven of Swords is because he's always telling it like it is. And they say Sugar fooled us and we trusted him. That's one of his names that he uses, Sugar, for shooting guard because he's totally into basketball. And so, yeah, that he was always playing tricks on them and they didn't know that they were being gotten in a way. And then I pulled these at random. And the other two were the Two of Cups and the Lovers. And I mean, nobody knows what the sexuality of these guys are. And it's, to come out publicly as gay is anathema. It will destroy their careers. So we have no idea what they're, because none of them have gotten married at this point. They're in their early 30s right now. But these are the ones that there's always what they call skin service, that they, when they're singing their songs and stuff, they'll put their arms around each other, hold hands, or give a flower from one to another. But what it is, that a lot of the K-pop groups do this, and that it's really about being close with other people and really committing to liking them and being friends. Here, the two of them are drinking together. They're carrying each other on their backs half the time. Yeah, it opens people up. And because they're famous around the world, what's happened is that there's literally millions and millions of people who've opened up more emotionally. My friends, when I got into them, said, you're being so much more expressive and you're telling people you love them more than you normally do. And you're willing to hug quicker than you would normally do it. And I tend to be a little reserved, and I'm not so much anymore, partly just through the kind of joy and happiness that they exuded through being close with each other. And I thought, I've got my tarot community and my magical community. Why do I ever hold back, ever, when we have these opportunities to be together? And I still have to fight it a little bit, my natural reserve. Unless I get talking with somebody like you, I often just sit there and be quiet. But they tell the people you love them. Luckily, shortly before Rachel died was when I had really gotten into them and was able to come out and say things that I had never expressed to her before, of how much I really loved her and cared for her. And I think they helped me do that, for which I'm eternally grateful. Yeah.
The power of music, eh?
Yeah.
And art. Yeah. Just music helped me open up in a lot of ways when I committed to it full time. And I'm so glad I did, because it does open up this doorways to these other dimensions. The music gives us permission to explore not just aspects of our dark side, but also our light side, which can be even more hidden than our dark side, I think, a lot of the times, because of social pressure, family norms and customs, or just our own natural reservations as human beings, in shock at having this physical experience all of a sudden and being like, where am I? What do I do? How do I deal with this? And music is this river, this wave, this ocean of sound that makes us realize we're all connected. And that's what music does. We all hear it. We hear the same thing. Hear it slightly differently, but it's the same source. And then what do? We all start to move. We all move.
Right? I know. I find myself
talking. We start moving. Yeah. It's so beautiful. And that's why I knew I was the one to bring up K-pop with you when I heard you were into it, because I was like, oh, I can do this. I can have this conversation with Mary, and I'm so glad you let me. Yeah. I wish we could do it all night, of course. Actually, someone in the comments says, ugh, this is one of those interviews I wish could go on much longer. Thank you, Anna. Thank Jordan. You. Thank you very much. I don't think we should draw it out, but rather than draw it out, perhaps you can just come back again sometime soon.
Yeah.
And we can do another hour or so to answer people's questions. So for now, maybe people can just go get into your books, go get one of the many books that I've recommended, or check out the deck her friend Rachel Pollack put out. The Essence of Tarot is absolutely a must-have for any magician. I'm just going to say for any magician. And I really want to get in touch with this fellow had it not been for this interview, I might never have actually heard of this book, because I just noticed it and noticed that you wrote the foreword, and I thought, I got to check that out.
Neuroscience of Tarot.
And, he looks like a hoot. The guy looks like he's a fun guy. Am I right?
Oh, he is. He's wonderful. Siddharth Ramakrishnan. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. PhD in neuroscience, artist, and educator.
Yeah. Yeah. Serious, he's a college man. Professor. Yeah, definitely. And also a lot of fun. He can really dance. When we get out there at the conferences, everybody come to the tarot conferences. They are a hoot. They're fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah.
We welcome everyone.
And hopefully we can be there. Here's a follow-up comment from Anna Jordan. You're welcome. I'm very new to witchcraft and tarot, and I'm trying to soak up as much as I can. You're welcome. Keep soaking. Yeah. There's lots on my YouTube channel. Mary Greer has a plethora of her life's work to share with you and wisdom. Someone else says, great interview. Thank you. Thanks for all the comments and everyone listening. And I know many more people will listen to it in the days and years to come, this interview. Mm-hmm. So, I feel like we could go on more about K-pop and BTS. I mean, just could say a couple more minutes. Well, how can we end this? How do we end this with grace, Mary?
Oh, Borahe. Borahe. It's a word that means I purple you, if it's, but it actually is that purple is the final color on the color spectrum, integrating all the colors that came before it, not in the physical, but in the psychical. And it means that I will love and support you ever. And so it's something that we all say to each other.
Beautiful.
Connected in tarot. And it was made up in the middle of a conference by one of the members of BTS. He was just talking to the concert. And they have huge concerts, 50,000 people, the biggest. They fill them within hours. So anyway, in the middle of it, when he was just talking to the audience, he came up with this idea spontaneously of this is what connects us, this purple light. And the purple Beautiful. Heart. And of course, they use little mini hearts or like this to send the love out to everyone. Yeah.
That mini hearts. Lovely. I know we got to wrap up. I got to spend a day in Seoul running around with a disposable
Isn't
camera.
Isn't it wonderful?
I had a layover and I just bust into town. Didn't know it would be in the middle of a snowstorm. So I was in flip-flops and a Hawaiian shirt with shorts. And I had a mandolin strung over my back with just a draw cord, with just a drawstring. And I didn't realize, because I was coming from somewhere warm and I had a layover, I didn't realize it would be a snowstorm. But it was. I was fine. I had 6 hours. Went into a corner store, grabbed a disposable camera and a bottle of Jägermeister at the checkout because I needed to keep warm. I had a 10-hour flight ahead of me and just ran around taking photos of before the gate burned down. So I got photos of me with the gate and everyone wanted to take photos with me because they saw some white dude, right, with a t-shirt, a mandolin, flip-flops in a snow. It was just snowing. It was snowing. And I was just running around taking photos and I only had 6 hours before I had to get back on the bus to the... Yeah, I thought I'd share that. Before. That's a nice way to...
Yeah.
Have you been to Seoul or Korea?
To Seoul for just a couple of days in last October. Yeah, it was fabulous. It was absolutely fabulous. Yeah, and the food's great. The people are great. Yeah.
The food is great. The food creates.
They love tarot. There's tarot shops everywhere.
They do love tarot. So does China, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I teach there. I was on my way to teach in China.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know Lon teaches there a lot or used to. What about a BTS official tarot deck with you? They should do a deck with you.
There's this fan deck, which I absolutely love because I recognize every single image on it and know what all the references are, and they're perfect. They absolutely did it. The people who did a perfect job. Yeah, it would be wonderful if they did.
I will keep my fingers crossed and maybe ask a few spirits to see what they can do. So that would be really cool. That would be pretty cool to get their... They have also budgets to work with that might be helpful to make really an amazing deck. That would be cool. I'm going to put my thoughts out there into the universe for that. Because you never know. You never
And know. One more thought, please. The very first day that I discovered them and fell in love with them, I decided someday I want to do a tarot reading for their leader, RM, and please, Kim Namjoon is his actual name, and to do a reading with him would be my deepest heart desire. I know it would just be absolutely amazing. He's the one who's the deep reader and philosopher. He's written the majority of their, I shouldn't say the majority of their songs, but more than altogether than any of the others have. For them and for others, and he's one of the main rappers, or I should say the main rapper.
Let's everyone who listens to this interview throw up our intentions for that, because that would be really cool to have that happen for you. And it is absolutely not outside the realm of possibility, given how interconnected and synchronicitous the world is these days. It's a time of chaos in a way, but that's also, as they say, the best time for magic.
Yep. Okay. So Mary Kay lovely Greer, talking.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor, a pleasure to see you again. I was so glad to hang out with you 6 years ago now, dear Lord, time flies. And we had such a fun time harassing Lon and doing shots with the Llewellyn and publishers and stuff in the special rooms. And then there's down the halls, the orgy room with the radical fairies and all the crazy stuff going on. It's a wild time at that Pantheacon. Yeah, the stories abound on my podcast and people are like, could this be real? It's, yes, it was real. And I'm sure there'll be big conferences like that again someday. But for now, have a wonderful evening and good luck with the snow. And I'm glad the power stayed on throughout all of this. Thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah. Much love. Please and subscribe. And Mary, all my love. Thank you for everything you brought to my life.
And to everybody who came to watch this, thank you.
Bye, people. Mary Kay Greer is an independent scholar, writer, teacher, and professional tarot consultant, known for her innovative teaching techniques. With over 56 years tarot experience, she is the author of 12 books on tarot and on magic, and taught tarot in colleges and universities for 12 years. Hermetic Science Enterprises is a publishing company based in Scotland, UK, that specializes in Western esoteric printed literature as well as educational videos. With various imprints under its belt, its roster consists of grimoire tradition literature, alchemical works, Golden Dawn tradition books, and the several texts and videos originally belonging to the philosophers of nature. Besides its downloadable videos and standard hardcover edition books, Hermetic Science Enterprises also produces beautiful and precious limited fine edition books that are true pieces of art. For more information to order any of its products, please visit www.hermeticscienceenterprises.co.uk. That's hermeticscienceenterprises.co.uk. And as a lot of you know, I've talked with the publisher Lenny on the podcast before, including a six-hour epic extended version on the Patreon, and seen the fine edition of his new Grimoire of Scott's Discovery of Witchcraft, which is only available for purchase up to 50 limited copies till the end of May, I believe. So check it out now, hermeticscienceenterprises.co.uk.
EnochiaCon 2025 was a blast, and thank you so much to Dr. Justin Sledge for bringing that rare, true and faithful relation copy of Dee's original Enochian work. We are proud to now announce InnokiaCon 2026, November 6th through 8th in Austin, Texas. 2026 membership includes access to our workshop this spring, also in Austin. We will have multiple rooms, a workshop room, a green room, a dining hall, a whole building downtown. But 2025 is not done yet. Our members still have access to this December 6th, 2025, a full-day workshop with Dr. Terry Burns and Frater R.C. on the practice of Enochian magic, online and in person from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thanks for watching to the end. Let's share some more details about 2026. Our EnochiaCon conference and spring workshop will be in Austin, Texas, 6th through 8th of November for the EnochiaCon itself. You can sign up at arcaneresearchsociety.com/2026. But it's not too late also to attend our 2025 course of study, including the December 6th full-day workshop on the practice of Enochian magic with me and Dr. Terry Burns. You can go to EnochiaCon.com to sign up there.
Diving deep into the practices and reality tunnels of the esoteric and the occult, check out Praxis Behind the Obscure podcast, where I interview practicing occultists, do book reviews, and much more. Check us out on YouTube, Red Circle, and many other podcast platforms.